Blog Talk Radio.
Show. This is Lori Smith. This is One Child Abuse Survivor to Another Restoration. And glad to be here. It's Friday morning, November 24th, 7:30 in the morning here in Calgary, Alberta. I'm glad to be doing the show. And thanks for everybody who's been tuning into the shows. That's awesome of you. Hopefully you're getting something out of this. And yeah, we'll just get right into this. This is just a continuation of my healing journey. And you know, we're just looking at anxiety. That's an article from Havoka. That's what we're looking at right now. And so, yeah, thanks for joining me. And hopefully you're having a good morning so far. My morning's going okay. I just sort of woke up. I'm actually still sort of trying to wake up here. And I'm glad it's Friday. Thank God. And it's been a week. It's been a very busy week for me. So I'm exhausted. But it's all good because today's Friday and I'm off on the weekend. So I can try to get some rest or just at least kick back for a while. And so, yeah, glad to be here. And if you're a survivor of abuse, you know, you want to make sure you're safe enough to be listening to the show or anything like it, you know, just do a safety checklist. Make sure that you're safe enough that you're not going to hurt yourself or somebody else around you, you know, that the show might not trigger you and cause you to have a horrible day, send you backward in your healing journey. Nobody wants that, right? And so material like this of any type from anybody's shows or reading anything on the web or you know, watching anything on TV or anything like that can trigger survivors of abuse. So you want to make sure you're safe enough to be listening. If you're not sure if you're even safe enough or what that is, you can get that information from ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. That's a Morris Center program. And or you can grab it from Havoka, HAVOCA, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse. They have a safety section there as well. And so make sure you get that information first. If you're not sure, just turn the show off and don't listen to, you know, you don't listen to it. You wouldn't be hurting my feelings. And anybody else, you have to listen at your own discretion. I'm talking about abuse, and you just never know what I'm going to be talking about here. Abuse is a very sensitive topic. So it bothers most people. I had to live with this my whole life. So live with the aftermath of it, you know, and it's not easy. It's not easy to deal with or listen to. So if you're just listening and the topics of violence or abuse or anything like that might bother you, you definitely need to make a good decision for yourself. Ultimately, you're the only one that can do that. So everybody has to listen at your own discretion. And I did put the chat room open, and I had a little trouble getting it open there, but it is open, and hopefully it's working there for anybody who wants to sit in the chat room. I'll check it now and then. And yeah, this is just a morning reflection, looking at you know, how am I doing on my healing journey, what I need to work on, what I need to keep working on. It sort of keeps me accountable to stay on my healing journey instead of just putting it off and to keep working on it. So, and hopefully it's helping other people too. And so we're going to finish up this one section of this understanding anxiety this morning. And this is from Havoka. And we'll just say, okay, morning reflection, how are we doing on our healing journey? Any particular things we need to work on? And how am I doing this morning? I would say pretty good. I'm just busy and overtired, but that's just normal for me. I'm just always overtired. I never get enough rest, and I just don't sleep well most of the time. So I never have slept well, so I think that's a big issue. And I, you know, unless I knock myself out with Tylenol, I have a really hard time sleeping. So It might be due to the fact that I drink coffee like right up until the very minute before I go to bed, so it's just not a good thing. So I'm trying to work on cutting out the coffee at night, but I'll drink coffee like right up until I turn the lights out. It's bedtime. Like, I'm drinking my last cup of coffee. So it's, you know, there's certain things I need to try to do to sort of help myself to have a better sleep and have a better rest. And sleep's just never been a priority for me, so I need to start making it a priority. And, you know, I'm just exhausted. So other than that, I'm going to try to get some rest on the weekend. I'm feeling pretty good. I was triggered. I saw a movie, actually, that triggered me during the week. And I had never seen this movie before. It's an old movie from 2005. I had wanted to see it forever. Never did see it at the time. Finally caught up with it on Netflix, Four Brothers. And it was a really great movie, but it really triggered me. Caused me to think of all kinds of things, you know, just the type of movie that it was, just looking at these four brothers who were adopted by this woman and were adopted out of foster care. So all of them probably had, you know, probably really dysfunctional upbringings, probably abuse involved there. And the movie definitely triggered me because I've got four brothers, and it made me think of my own family situation. And then it made me start to wonder, you know, would I have been probably better off in foster care? Maybe not. You know what I mean? There's no easy answers for abuse survivors. You know, it's like, it is what it is. You know, I've told that people have asked me, well, how come you just didn't, you know, because there was a couple of interventions done. Even my parents were brought up on child abuse charges. And, you know, we were not removed from the home, but we were allowed to stay in the home. Unfortunately, the abuse just kept right on going. And my parents weren't going to change. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it went. And they ruined our whole entire family. I put the blame on those two for sure. They were the ones responsible for it. When I was in my teens, I could have had an intervention done actually twice where I could have been removed from my home, I'm sure of it. I would have ended up in foster care. My mom would have been happy. She wanted me out of the house anyway. And she never wanted me in the first place. So she didn't care if I ended up in foster care. See? So, but I kept wanting to stay because I was the only child that my mom would threaten to put into foster care. All of my other siblings, even though they were doing drugs and stealing and ripping my parents off and get in trouble with the law. They were, you know, stealing from my sis. My older sister is 5 years older than me. They were ripping off her stuff for drug money. They were ripping off the neighbors for drug money. And my parents never threatened to put them in foster care. They were my older brothers. And, you know, but she would threaten me with foster care. She'd be like, I don't care if you go to foster care. I don't want you anyway. So that just broke my heart. I'm like, you know, I'm not stealing. I'm trying to behave myself. You know, I'm pretty decent, you know, young teen, you know, wasn't getting into too much trouble. And I just couldn't figure out why she would be like that to me, you know. So I really wanted her to, I wanted to force her to look after me and take care of me. So I opted to stay in the home. But there was a couple of interventions done. But it's just crazy, you know, what happens to people, you know, children who grow up in abuse and dysfunction, and the damage that it does psychologically and the problems it causes later. It's just unbelievable. So that movie did trigger me for sure, and I'm sure I'll be dealing with the aftermath of this trigger for a while until I can get my feelings straight on it. My, you know, brought up a lot of, it's not the movie was great. I really loved the movie, but the thing is it brought up a lot of things that caused me to sort of think and look back at certain things and question my decision-making processes when I, you know, what happened and why I made the decisions I did, and which then causes me grief because I'm thinking, well, gee, I had a better chance in a foster care system. I might have been treated decently and, you know, wanted and cared for, right? So these things are really tough, and it's hard for this introspection stuff. And that's why, you know, you have to be careful that something doesn't trigger you and then you have a horrible time. I'm okay and I'm safe to look at this stuff and safe to deal with it on my own. But some people aren't, and you have to be careful and make sure that you get some help if you can't, you know, cope, or you're having a hard time dealing with something, or, so, you know, issues from the past that just come up and, you know, just you have to face them. And it's just like, wow, they can be really overwhelming. And so you have to get help, you know. If you don't have somebody to talk to, you know, you make sure you reach out. And find some, you know, get some help, right? Don't be on your own with this. This is horrible. And it's like I'm very blessed to have a very supportive husband. And so I don't really talk to him too much about stuff, but he's there if I needed to. That's a very comforting thing. And plus, I mean, I know, like, if I have trouble, I can just, you know, I can call a crisis line. You know, I don't have to be. I can go go get counseling. I don't have to be on my own in this, right? And neither does anybody else. It's really quite sad that we do quite often close ourselves off from the world, really, at a time when we really need help. And this is terrible. That's what happens, and it's awful. So I would say, you know, get some help if you're struggling. So yeah, I'm just kind of dealing with that stuff that's leftover triggering stuff from that movie. Otherwise, I'm feeling pretty good. We'll finish this article here on anxiety and move on from there. Understanding anxiety. This is from HAVOCA, H-A-V-O-C-A, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse, Information for Survivors. It's under their anxiety tab, and it's called Understanding Anxiety. They said here, it is not always possible to say what causes someone to develop anxiety. In some cases, there may be a stressful event, such as the death of a loved one or being made redundant, which triggers it off. It may also follow on for major upheaval, such as moving house. Even if this is something we've chosen to do, it creates a lot of worry and disruption in our lives. On other occasions, someone may have experienced a gradual buildup of pressure in their lives, which makes them particularly vulnerable. And things may not be going well at work or in an important relationship. And we may be trying to juggle many different demands on us and satisfy them all. And this is particularly the case for women who are working and who also have to make sure children are cared for. We may be apprehensive about the future, perhaps because of the ill health of someone dear to us as a result of financial problems or of children leaving home. We tend to think that stress implies being too busy and pressured. But if we're in a situation where we don't have enough to do, this can be just as difficult to cope with. They said if we're unemployed or in a boring job, which we don't enjoy, we may become frustrated and depressed and find ourselves at a low ebb. So they said it's not only recent events which can contribute to anxiety. Things which happened in our past and even things we don't fully remember can affect us later. And we still have the feelings of fear and distress, although we can't identify what the bad thing was which led us to feel this way. And often, too, we become set in a way of looking at the world which confirms our worst fears and feeds our anxieties. And the horrors we see on the news may convince us further that we are quite right to feel frightened. If things go wrong in our own lives, this only confirms our worst expectations and reinforces our anxiety. Yeah, anxiety is a real problem for people, not just survivors of abuse. You know, it's kind of no wonder if survivors of abuse have some anxiety problems. But the world itself has a lot of anxiety problems, and people in general, I think, could have lots of anxiety problems. It's not something just strictly related to abuse survivors, right? So yeah, what they're saying there's pretty accurate. You know, things build up, and it doesn't necessarily have to be any one particular set of issues. You know, just you know, things happen to people, and it just soon becomes overwhelming if it's one thing on top of another on top of another, and things aren't dealt with, and then we're developing these emotions, based on what's happening, and if we're not dealing with them, we're either going to stuff them or we're not going to know what to do with them. So I think anxiety is a real problem for a lot of people. I know I don't have the same level of anxiety problems that I used to when I was a child growing up being abused, but that's because I'm not being abused anymore. I'm an adult and I can take care of myself and do what I need to do to get things done. So, you know, I don't have nearly the anxiety problems that I used to have. I know when I was really little, I had severe anxiety problems. That's just because of the abuse that was in the home. My parents were fighting, physically fighting as well as verbally bashing each other all the time from the time I was born right on through. They never did stop until they got really old. And then my siblings, my parents, especially my dad was abusing my brothers. My mom was also abusive towards my brothers, but mainly towards me. My siblings were not, they didn't stick together as a unit. There was only a couple of them that actually got along. The rest of them all just did their own thing. One of them, my brothers left when he was 16. He moved out when I was born, actually. And just because of the abuse, he was gone. He just went on the streets and took off. And then I didn't even know he was my brother. I didn't meet him until later in life. And then one of my sisters was moved out before I was born, and she got out before she turned, right when she hit 17, 18. And so she's 18 years older than me. So she was out of the house before I was born. And because of the abuse, she was just gone. She got married really early and hooked up with this guy, which she loved, I'm sure, who she loved. And she was gone. So there's a couple of siblings that moved out. But the rest of the siblings, we were all dealing with this abuse and this garbage. My parents were brought up on abuse charges. It was absolutely horrific the way that I grew up. You know, I remember I had all kinds of nervous little tics that I used to do, and my sister would beat me up because of it. And she would say, "Oh, she did apologize for hitting me because she used to hit me all the time." And that's what my mom was doing, so that she just was doing what my mom was doing. So my mom was beating on me, so my sister was too. And so it's kind of the way it was. But instead of being caring, she was also in the same situation I was in. So she wasn't able to cope either. She was 5 years older than me, my sister, so she wasn't able to help, you know. It's not like she could hold me and say, it's okay. You know, she never tried to console me because she herself was suffering in this mess. And she was only 5 years older than me, so it's not like, you know, she was that much older that she could actually get a grip on what was going on. And it was absolutely horrific the way that we grew up. And so, you know, it was nuts. I had all kinds of problems through elementary school, middle school, high school. I started doing drugs in middle school. And I swore I'd never do drugs, you know. But after being abused and sexually abused, and my brothers were drug users, my parents were just abusers, I was just like, you know, I got to do something, you know. And I wasn't necessarily thinking of contemplating suicide at that time, but I was thinking that if I died, it wouldn't be such a bad thing. You know, it's kind of like it was one way out, you know, to get out of that mess. Then later, as a sort of a mid-teen, you know, I started to think about sort of suicidal ideation. I used to tell my parents to go ahead and kill me. I was just like, I didn't care, you know, and this is absolutely horrific, right? So then I just shut down. So just not able to cope. So I did a lot of drugs and shut down as a person, couldn't deal with anything. And basically just shut it out because I was just unable to cope. And this is, so masked, you know, it was very masked. I actually looked like I was coping quite well because of the drugs and my very supportive friends. Thank God for them. And, you know, I could be somebody else on those drugs, see? I could be tough outside on the streets, you know. I could be, instead of the one getting my ass beat at home and sexually abused and tortured and told off and screamed at and verbally abused, psychologically abused on the street, I could be tough, you know. I was the tough party chick, you know. And, you know, the one that didn't seem to care about things very much, that's for sure. You know, I'd pass out at parties and wake up and wonder, you know, checking for to see if my clothes were still on. I was like, oh, thank God my clothes are still on. Because I could have been raped, you know. Like, I used to pass out in the middle of the street, you know, just pass out in the gutter. Like, just too much alcohol, too many drugs. I mean, I was a young kid, right? 13, 14, 16, 17, you know. And anything could happen, you know. I was really blessed to have people around me that were looking out for me. But I didn't care. See, that's the problem. And, you know, people just thought I was this really crazy chick, you know. They were just like, wow, she's nuts. You know, only a few people actually knew that there was really the problems that I had been suffering at home. And most everybody else was seeing this person that was just very carefree, irresponsible, and unable to just do normal life, you know. So it took me a long time to kind of, you know, work through that stuff. Even in my mid-20s, I mean, I had problems with suicidal ideation all the way through into my 30s and then hit rock bottom at 42, at the age of 42, and was just thinking, this is it. I can't keep doing this. I can't keep, how many years am I going to be suffering in this, you know, wanting to self-injure, it's got to just, you know, something's got to give, man. You know, that was the point where I just realized just how far gone I really was. And I was just like, oh my God, I got to get help, you know. Like, I can't continue on like this because I'm gonna end up, you know. I mean, suicide was a real issue in my home. I grew up with a bunch of people wanting to kill themselves and trying to kill the family too. So, you know, suicide was an option for me. And, you know, my parents were always talking about suicide. My mom was always talking about suicide. My dad was actually suicidal. My brother was suicidal and killed himself after three or four attempts. My other brother died of a drug overdose, which I know was a suicide because it was his birthday and he was in a shelter, and I'm sure he just did way too. He just probably said, that's it, I'm done. Because my mom, he had called and he wanted to come home for Christmas and my mom wouldn't let him. And I think he just gave up, you know, at the age of 30. What was he? 20, 35. So absolutely horrific, you know, like this sort of stuff. This is not funny. You know, what abuse does to people. And this anxiety stuff is, like, very difficult to get a hold of. I know for myself, now that I've been on my healing journey for 10 years, It's been since 2007, really, that I started my healing journey, but the main bulk of it from 2009 on. And the work that I've been doing through that, you know, I'd say 8 years, has really helped me out because I'm not in the same place that I was at all. So obviously something's better, you know what I mean? I still struggle, but I don't have the same amount of difficulty dealing with the emotions, dealing with the problems that I was having, because I've learned how to deal with them and learned how to cope. And so, yeah, I have bad days too. I get triggered and things will trigger me, all kinds of things, calendar dates, you know, holidays. Holidays is a big one. Thinking about the family, you know, anytime there's any mention of brothers, you know, that just breaks my heart because my brothers, you know, their lives were just so screwed. You know, one was murdered, two for overdose. One of my brothers is still living. He doesn't talk to me because I went public with my stuff, and he doesn't like me anyway. So whatever. But anyway, I don't know him anyway, so whatever. He moved out before I was even born, so we don't have any relationship anyway. But, you know, he doesn't like what I'm doing. I really don't care, you know. He was trying to be a dad to me. I'm like, I don't need another dad. I had an asshole, abusive dad. I don't need another one, that's for sure. I need a brother, like a real brother, man. He's going to hug me and hold me and tell me it's going to be okay. You know, and help me out and help me get through this stuff. You know, he's 16 years older than me. And, you know, he probably figured, well, I didn't have any help, so you don't get no help. That's how my older sister was, too. Nobody helped me, so I'm not helping you. You know? It's like, well, that's real nice. So our family was just not a family at all. It was just a war zone full of a bunch of people who hated each other. And then my sister, who's 5 years older than me, tries to pretend like we actually had a family and it was great. And it's like, you know, you're just screwed. You need to get help. You seriously need help. And we're all screwed and you need help. Because she just lives in some weird little world, man, that's not even reality. So this is the way it is, you know. These sort of things can happen. So I've just learned how to deal with it, and I learned how to put things in, you know, in perspective and priority. You know, certain things, you know, I'll have to work on. You know, I know that there's coping, you know, ways that I can use that are very helpful for me to cope. I've learned a lot of coping skills, and which is great because I had none. I had zero coping skills before, just drugs, drugs and alcohol. And I mean, I still want to go back to that, you know, even sitting around yesterday, you know, just triggered all out, just triggered big time. And I mean, I was sitting there thinking, man, I, you know, if I had some drugs around me right now or some alcohol, I'd be doing it, you know? Because that's my old self wanting to go back to using those coping mechanisms that never worked in the first place. Just numbing, you know. That's not taking care of the issues, you know. So I'm off the drugs and I don't drink anyway. I'm not really into alcohol that much, but, you know, I don't do drugs. You know, I've been off the drugs since I was like 22. So that's a long time. That's like 30 years. I've been free from drug use. And do I want to go back to it? Yeah. You know, I sure I do. It's going to be there forever. It's going to be a problem for me. That's why I don't allow myself to do these things. Just stay away from it, you know. It will be real easy for me to walk back into that lifestyle of passing out in the street, doing too many drugs, overdosing like my brother, and ending up dead in the morgue. Way too easy for me. That's the lifestyle that I lived for so many years when I was young and numbing the pain. But it didn't help. It was obvious by the age of 42 that all of that stuff never even I never learned any proper coping mechanisms. So there's things you can do, and there's things that I can do. So we'll look at a few of these here today. There's all kinds of things we can do to help ourselves cope. There's this website. It's Irving Studios. It's called Child Abuse Survivor Monument. If you just type into your browser, Irving Studios Child Abuse Survivor Monument. You go to his website. He's got a survivor tab for information for survivors of abuse. He himself is a survivor of abuse. This, what's his name? I can't remember his name now. Michael C. Irving. He's a sculptor and a therapist, and he's got a website there, and he's also a survivor of abuse himself. And so he's got some really cool stuff there. I hope you'll go check it out. But he's got a thing on creating a safe environment in the here and now. This is stuff that we can do for ourselves if we're triggered and we're having a hard time. What we can do is, he says, choose a room or a safe area in your house where you can reassure yourself that you are safe. Rearrange the area so that it increases the sense of safety, and place objects around to assist with the sense of safety. Adjust the intensity of the lighting or placement of light to help you in knowing you're safe, so we can create a safe room for ourselves. And, you know, if we're really struggling and having a hard time, even in our own personal space, in our own house, which, I mean, quite often that's where I'm at, so that's where I'm struggling. We can know that we're safe, right? We can create a room that actually says, I'm safe, so that when I go in there, that's my safe room, you know? It's to have a portable phone to make calls if you need to, right? Have a list of emergency and support numbers where you can see them or find them easily. That's important, especially for people who are really struggling. Got to have a support. You got to have a backup support group, man. You really do. Put bells on doors and windows to act as a warning sound, right? Just in case you're worried about somebody coming in. Doors and windows, put bells on them. Have comforting objects around like blankets and soft toys. Have soothing and peaceful music. Put up pictures or posters that are nurturing, protective, reassuring, or empowering. I did a lot of this stuff when I was younger. Without even realizing it. And also after I started my healing journey. But even before that, I used to do this protective bubble thing, you know, and where this bubble, I would envision this bubble was around me, protecting me. Put up affirmation cards or post-its. Put up a positive letter, you know, or a card from a friend. Put up certificates or awards that make you feel stronger. Make a wrap around, like put affirmations on a t-shirt or a pillowcase or a blanket and wrap yourself in it. And healing shield. Make a shield of images of strength and protection and hang it in a visible place. That's a good idea. Wear protection. Put on jewelry, clothing that reminds you of safety and protection. Clean clutter and chaos from your house or even just one room. Use a Walkman to feel focused in creating a private world. Avoid substance abuse, absolutely. Go to dinner or cafe that feels safe, you know. Create a comfort kit that includes your phone list, money for a call, for emergency call or whatever, a small teddy bear, a stress ball, some sweet, some incense or something that smells nice to you, a small jar of lotion, a photo of a happy time or a friend, comfort food, whatever's going to help to keep us feeling safe and comfortable. Because, you know, that's the thing, you know, children who are abused, you know, abuse survivors mainly, especially child abuse survivors, but even other survivors of abuse, you were violated. We were violated. You know, it's easy to feel unsafe, right? And there's things that we can do to help ourselves to feel safe, right? So you can get that information. There's a whole lot more of it about coping skills, boundaries, creating containment and boundaries and all that, which I've done a lot of that work already. But it's Irving Studios, www.irving, IrvingStudios.com. Or you can just type in Child Abuse Survivor Monument. And you can get that information there. So, yeah, we have about, a couple minutes left here. And let's see, what do we want to look at? So, yeah, that's, we sort of skipped over a couple things. But that's the coping mechanisms. How can we cope? Self-care, what are we doing physically, spiritually, emotionally to care for ourselves, you know? Like, I'm just working on getting rest, you know, and trying to eat a little bit healthier. I need to lose some weight and start getting some exercise. Because my body won't hold the weight. It's just not, you know, like, it just doesn't hold extra weight that well because I've just got so many injuries. But I need to drop some weight, but I can't exercise because my body's in terrible shape. You know, I've got broken bones and my hips go out and my rib cages go out and I've got all kinds of skeletal problems. So it's difficult for me to exercise, but I do have a rower and I could get on that thing, you know, and it wouldn't hurt. But I'm too busy doing other things. And so it's, you know, it's tough to make these things happen. But we can do it. We can do it. I would say the best thing is just to stay positive and don't get too down on yourself, right? Because you know what? Like today's today. You can only get done what you can do. Tomorrow's just tomorrow. And we can't worry about tomorrow because it hasn't even come yet. So I would say just, you know, not put pressure on ourselves, right? And look at some positives instead of negatives all the time. And if you just got to get up out of bed this morning or you know, and you just going to do it another day and you're going to stay positive for another day and you're just going to call someone if you need help and like crisis line or whatever, I'd say that's a positive. You make sure that you get help, you know, you don't struggle on your own. And we'll be back Monday. I should be back on Monday and I've got my show page there. I'll be updating that with some more shows and stuff. And so I wish you a really wonderful weekend. Take really good care of yourself. You certainly deserve it. I know that I do. And we'll talk to you next week.